20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You know my guest already, but I will introduce him anyway. You can find him on social media at JUMOSQ. Of course, acmepackingcompany.com. Cannot recommend you checking out acmepackingcompany.com every single day enough. It is a go-to every single day for me. Justice, I don't know where you want to start with this crap show of a game, but I will let you pick your poison and go any direction that you want following that disaster.
No, I mean, I don't like direction. I'm like moving like water this week, right? We got there's so many takes. And I guess it happens when you drop five interceptions against Bo Nix, and then you have the weird situation against the Bears where it's like a 1 in 200 game choke job, right? Like, genuinely, there's a choke job that, like, this is a choke job that doesn't even happen once every year. I think Next Gen Stats had it top five in their era, which is since 2016, so that's a decade. It was, what, 99.5% chance of the Packers winning?
Yep.
We had to do some really special things to lose that football game, and we did it in Chicago. And I know, again, because half of the writers at APC are, like, in Chicagoland. And this is just updates on how annoying Bears fans are constantly, even after they won, or Green Bay won the first time around. They were all listening to Chicago sports radio the week after. And they were like, dude, they think they won that football game. This is crazy. And then you get Caleb Williams, DJ Moore, and Cheese Grater Hats, all that stuff. No, man, I don't – like, I have thoughts. Direction, not super certain about that. I'm still stunned. I can't really believe it.
I had so that it's a night game, which is always the hardest with doing the podcast and the live show after and putting together the notes and doing everything. It's usually a pretty late late night / early morning for me, and I'm just like, I do the live show immediately after. And then I'm just like sitting in my chair, just like kind of like doom scrolling Packers Twitter of like seeing what everyone's saying. And I like couldn't get myself out of it. I was just like, I had so much to do. And I eventually ended up recording the next day's podcast at like 5:30 in the morning. And it still had not gone to bed at that point, just because like I was just in stunned disbelief again of what transpired in that game. And I didn't even know how to like put words together to articulate what I wanted to say until finally I just said, screw it. I guess I have to do this. But rewatching that game was not fun. I'm not looking forward to the tape review this week. That's not going to be fun either. But here we are, another 2014 Seattle Seahawks game-esque. And it's not fun.
Yeah, I went to work immediately. Like, that's kind of how I coped with it. That's how I cope with it. Lots of articles on APC. We did really well. A lot of people have figured out what we need to do. Turns out the offensive linemen wearing sleeves and the receivers wearing guardian caps. That's the issue with the team.
I've noted that on multiple occasions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I mean, I just went to work. Like, I looked at how Jordan Morgan played. I mean, we could talk about the coverage bus and stuff like that. If you want, like, there's a million different directions you want to go. A lot happened in this game, Andy.
It did. Let's start with the big one. Let's start with the onside kick recovery. Okay. Are you fully team Romeo blew it? Are you team Bisaccia has blame here as well? Are you team, where were you at with things?
I mean, I think Romeo just blew it, man. And that's just how things work in the end. Okay, Andy, you were there at training camp. The NFL, you won't do live onside kick recovery during the NFL season. Not happening. Did you see live onside kick recovery in training camp?
Not once, no.
So they don't do it live. And that's a decision that you make at the head coach level, right? I believe Romeo. I mean, we haven't heard from Rich yet. We heard from Matt. But Romeo and Matt basically said the same thing, where it's like, No, man, we do this basically on air every week. He's in the right position. He drops the ball. I know people complain about the blocking. The blocking was kind of fine on that. Like, you're outnumbered. That's just how onside kick recoveries work. Sorry, guys. Like, they have five guys on each side lined up, and you have to cover 53 and a third yards and have guys further back too. Like, you're down blockers. There's going to be a free rusher, and you're expected to come down with the ball. I've seen people complain about putting Romeo in that position. Like, you were tweeting at me during the game, and you were like, Romeo's got – we got to change strong hands to soft hands, right, because he was making some catches in the game. I think people are, like, retconning the whole, like, Romeo is the worst wide receiver to put in that position. I don't know if that's true. Like, if you're – they send him over the middle all the – he's the guy that they throw the tough balls to, right? Yeah. So what do you mean? Like, I think people are just more mad that the result happened and they're trying to figure it out. What could have changed? Who we can blame? But, like, the truth of the matter is, like, yeah, dude, Romeo dropped it. That's what happened. And it's not – they're not going to practice it live this week either. That's just not how it works at the NFL level. That's all stuff that you need to be doing in the summer, because NFL practices, you get – so what is it? The first 11 weeks of the season, you get basically what amounts to one padded practice during the week per week. And then after that, like, you're a padded practice every other week. Like, the Packers – guys, in the playoffs, the Packers are going to have one padded practice every other week. Like, that's how this whole situation works out. So the idea that you're going to spend – what, practices are about 2 hours at on the high end in Green Bay, right? The idea that you're going to – one of your – not even just – one of your six special teams units, but a subsection of one of your six special teams units, that you're going to cover that every single time you have a padded practice just to get it in every week. Like, it's not reality. Like, what this is you put a guy in a position, you do it on air. You probably do it in, like, the walkthroughs on, you know, Fridays on a Sunday game. It would be Thursdays and Saturday games, right? He probably does a good job. And then if you make mistakes on the field, you correct it in basically a classroom when you're doing film work. So that's how this thing works, man. Players are expected to play.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I toyed with the, you know, would it have been better to have Matthew Gold in there? The more I thought about it, yeah, I agree. I think Romeo being in that spot is fine.
They had Matthew Golden do punt returns and they didn't trust his hands and they put Romeo out there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm fine with that as a decision in hindsight. I'm more of like, I don't necessarily know that this is anything that would be Rich Bisaccia's fault. I'm also not willing to give any accident forgiveness on it based on how the special teams have performed for 3 years. I think that's probably more where I'm at. And if Romeo just catches it, it's a non-conversation, right? I do think, you know, McKinney obviously gets blown through. I don't know that there's anything Melton could have done different, but he barely gets a hand on his guy. There's no urgency to go and try to recover the fumble or get closer to the onside kick by anybody outside of Romeo, obviously. But to your point, if Romeo catches it, it's a non-conversation.
Yeah. And Matt kind of spilled the beans. Believe him when he says this stuff, man. And people are going to get driven nuts because I think they're going to bring Rich back. But yeah, Matt was like, no, if you split it up into the cover, like the different units of special teams, the ones that we care about, we're actually doing pretty well at. And we're having, you know, you get the weird McManus injury situation. That's obviously tanking some stuff on special teams. Romeo has the fumble. A Matt decision of not letting Elton Jenkins be on the field goal protection unit, right? That costs you one.
Yeah.
But those are all kind of like one-offs that have like been corrected to a certain extent. So yeah, like there's going to be bumps and bruises when you're a draft and develop team and you don't backfill with special teamers on the 53 and stuff like that. And you make weird decisions like, oh yeah, we're going to have Brant Banks, who was like our offensive lineman number 11 play field goal protection and stuff. And I don't know what you want to do with the whole field goal rotation unit, but here's what it boils down to. The Packers don't care about the return game because they can't really care about the return game. If you're draft and develop and you have the receivers that Matt LaFleur demands, right? Which is big body guys, or you have to run like a 4-3 basically. And even if you do that, you're going to be a slot receiver. It's why Matthew Golden is buried and he's wide receiver 5 right now. He's probably not going to get a huge opportunity until Jaden Reed and his contract expires. It's really hard for LaFleur to get Reed and Golden on the field at the same time with the way that he wants to offense. So they're not going to ever be a factor in the return game, really. So your options are, you know, be good at the protection units. They have been when Brant Banks isn't in the game, right? And then the kick coverage units, punt return or punt team and kickoff coverage. And they've been pretty good at those. And that's what they care about and what they evaluate. So, yeah, it's just – it is what it is, man. Like, Green Bay does not care about special teams. And it's not really the coordinator. It's like the draft and develop philosophy. It's the way Matt needs to have his game day roster structured. Like, it's just a decision that was made.
Do you think it's the wrong decision? Do you think they need to reevaluate?
Yeah. And, you know, you talked about like the Domofsky stuff where he was saying that, you know, maybe the general manager is going to end up getting more power and stuff like that. Well, if Gouda is just strictly picking the players now, does the offensive line look different? Does the receiver room look different? Because Matt, it's really been a change with Matt, where Matt is like Gouda was fine drafting a Zach Tom. I mean, okay. Offensive lineman now in Green Bay, like, we're hovering around like 330, right? Yeah. In terms of playing weight. Is that a factor for why Josh Myers got picked instead of Creed Humphrey? Because Creed Humphrey seemed like he would have been a Packers pick. Like, if you would have drawn one up, that would have made a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
So if Goot gets more power than the head coach, and the general manager, you know, the head coach has to report to the general manager, all that stuff. Like, is he just like, look, figure it out with the good pass protectors. Like, it is what it is. This is what you're going to have to do. Maybe you have to air it out a little bit more, and you can't just run inside zone and counter the entire time. The receiver game, like, the receivers are so big in Green Bay. And I know people get mad and they're like, well, we don't have like these 6-7 guys on the outside. That's not what I'm heavy. Matt wants to have a heavy offense, not necessarily long, a heavy offense. Maybe that does open up the potential for a returner. Yeah. I mean, I could see some of those things working. I mean, Goot has gone after guys who do lean a little bit more special teams wise. As far as like the non-returners and stuff go, I don't know how that solves the Romeo issue.
Yeah, I don't think it does solve the Romeo issue. It just does feel like, hey, there's been enough instances now of special teams having catastrophic mistakes where they have to do something different. And, you know, when you have playoff game,
there's been decades of this though. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the point that I try to make to Packers fans, where I don't think, like, first of all, I don't think that they're going to hire a big-time special teams coordinator if they do fire Rich, because the market is going to look at the – first of all, Green Bay is reluctant to pay coaches in general, right? But the market is also going to look at Green Bay and be like, this is where, like, special teams coordinators go to die, dude, right? Like, they do not build up the infrastructure around you in the same way literally 31 other NFL teams do. I know people are like – well, NFL teams don't just like backfill with like specialty. Yet, kind of they do. Yeah, like in Green Bay has like this weird thing where like they really care. Like, I don't know if Nasir Stackhouse makes the roster over a special teams player for 31 other NFL teams.
Yeah.
to basically take like a redshirt year for his, you know, a rookie UDFA. That is very rare. There's a reason why people talk about the Packers UDFA streak and not the other teams in the league, all that stuff, right? Yeah, it's a weird situation.
And so obviously, you know, special teams has been an issue for a while. What hasn't been an issue for a while has been the red zone. However, these last 2 weeks, it has been a pretty significant issue. And in this game in particular, they go 0-for-5 in the red zone. Was there anything that you saw or picked up on that was different, worse, et cetera? Just bad luck, bad play calling, bad execution, anything that you picked up on? I mean, obviously Josh Jacobs fumbles. That's a tough situation. Outside of that, did you notice anything?
Nothing that's a through line, unless you want to say, like, you know, maybe Malik can't make certain throws when windows get tighter, so the Packers are calling more runs instead of passes where Jordan would have been on the field. I mean, I think Brady did a good job of showing the Christian Watson one where the ball travels out and the wind kind of picks it up and stuff. And obviously, wind was a factor in the game, even though the Bears didn't miss field goals. By the way, I think I got to find the stat, but Tex looked it up. I know, like, if you look at, like, the luck charts, the Packers are, like, way down, and it's because, like, no one is missing field goals against the Packers. I think no one's missed anything under 50 against Green Bay this entire year. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. There was that one Santos one that I thought was going to go wide right, and then it looked like it was going to go wide left, and it just, like, barely makes it in, and I was like, this is insane, man. Like, literally no one can – someone might be able to line up at the one-yard line, like it's old-school arena football, and be able to boot it 99 yards against us. I mean, I'm not counting it out at this point. Like, teams might just be able to get an automatic 3 points on field goal team. Like, it's just not our year that way.
It isn't. Kudos to Cairo Santos, who had one of the better kicking performances that I've seen in a long time. He, not only did he make all those field goals, including a 50-plus yarder in the win, but got a pretty darn good bounce on that onside kick as well. Not that I want to spend too much time giving credit to Chicago Bears players, but he deserved all the praise in that one. He was absolutely phenomenal in that game. Offensive line, Jordan Morgan gets the start at right tackle. They do put Darian Kennard back in the six offensive lineman look. Takeaways from Jordan Morgan. I know you put the clips together of every single snap in true pass sets. What did you think of Jordan?
Yeah, started off real shaky. It was not, I'm going to be honest, like the first drive, maybe two drives, it was not looking great. But then he really found a groove. I think he just needed to adjust kind of to Chicago's length and strength. The big one that people are going to point out is the sack, obviously. I mean, sticks out, all that stuff. I think he was expecting chip help on that one. Do you want to go into a nitty-gritty of pass protection assignments? Like, so you can do a thing. It's called dual reading, where you're not even looking at just one guy. You're looking at two guys. It's a call that you basically make in the huddle. The Packers, I think, in that situation, were looking for double chips. You got chip on the other side. You didn't get a chip from Emmanuel Wilson with Jordan Morgan. Basically, like, against certain looks and certain blitzes, Morgan actually would have turned over the defensive end fully to Emmanuel Wilson without giving him any help. That's just kind of the assignment that is tasked. And his eyes were on the defensive tackle, trying to see what the situation was in real time. And then all of a sudden there was a guy in his chest because there was not any chip help. So the timing definitely gets messed up. I mean, yeah, I don't necessarily put that one fully on him. Would love to know what the play call was just to, you know, be sure on that one. But from where I'm sitting, I don't think I would put that one fully on him. That's what it looks like when guys blow assignments.
We'll be right back. Hey, friends. Today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. It's the holiday season, the best time of the year for sports, because right now we have bowl games, marquee basketball matchups, playoff pushes, and it's all happening right now, all at once. While you and I are out making decisions every single day, like which gifts to buy, what to get for dinner, which game to watch, there's only one place where it feels good to be right, and that's Prize Picks. And I love how simple Prize Picks is to use, and more importantly, how fun it is to play. This football season's been even more fun with Prize Picks, and getting my picks in for each slate of games has been a super fun part of my football experience. Oh, and guess what? Prize Picks has a brand new feature, early payouts. If your lineup gets off to a hot start, you may now have the option to cash out those winnings before the game even finishes. So join the millions of users and sign up for America's number one fantasy sports app. This week, I'm going with Jaden Reed to put on a show against Baltimore as Green Bay tries to clinch a playoff berth. I'm also looking for big games from Ashton Jeanty, Matthew Stafford, and Bijan Robinson. Now it's time for you to get in on the action as well. Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. All right, so quick question for everyone. What's better, giving the perfect gift, getting the perfect gift, or making that perfect holiday meal for everyone when you're hosting a big holiday dinner? I go back and forth, but my true answer is giving the perfect gift. Well, the best part is that with Omaha Steaks, you can give the perfect gift, you can add it to the top of your wish list this holiday season, and you can order up some delicious Omaha Steaks to cook your family and friends for your big holiday dinner. It's a win-win all the way around. Now, I love how convenient it is to order Omaha Steaks and how much people love receiving them as gifts. I recently gave some steaks as a gift to a family member, and they were beyond overjoyed. It was a pretty cool moment. Also cooked up some Omaha Steaks, and that was a pretty cool moment as well because they were absolutely delicious. And right now, it's the perfect time to save on delicious gifts and holiday hosting favorites. Surprise your friends or family members with the gift of grass-fed, grain-finished beef from a family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. So save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com using promo code PACKADAY.
That's why it's difficult to always judge that stuff in real time, is because there's a lot more that goes into it and to who's ultimately responsible for that stuff. And I was kind of wondering from a Wilson standpoint if he was supposed to kind of help in and chip on that play. But yeah, those obviously make things a lot harder when things don't go according to plan.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you want to talk about another one, I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about the offensive line or you want to talk about the red zone touchdown, because that's another assignment that people have sort of like picked apart over the past couple days.
What was the other offensive lineman one that you had?
Oh no, I just didn't know if you wanted to.
No, that's good. it was just interesting because I was talking with Dusty Evely last night, and his assessment of Morgan was started really shaky, got really really solid at the beginning of the game or in the middle of the game, and then maybe a couple shaky moments at the end. And I talked to Mike Wall today, and I haven't had the chance to watch the all 22 yet of it, but Mike Wall says, yeah, I thought he started really shaky, really settled into the game. Then a couple moments at the end, and then I talked to you about it, and you say started really shaky, had some really good moments in the middle, and then maybe a couple shaky moments at the end. So
the video's up on APC if you want to make a decision for your own. When I started the all 22, I was like, oh God,
it's not good.
Maybe he played way worse than I thought, and then it just smoothed out pretty quickly. Yeah, I mean, I think he's a tackle. Like,
yeah, it is what it is. I agree. Couple quick offensive ones before we get to the defense. What do you do at tight end? John Fitzpatrick out for the year with a torn Achilles. They place him on IR, and you know Wiley maybe gets back this week from the concussion. Hopefully,
probably. But like Matt doesn't want to carry two. I think Ken was like, this might be like the first time they're carrying two tight ends like in any LaFleur game. I'm not gonna reinvent the wheel here. Like Big Dog is on Denver's practice squad if you need it. Like the Packers aren't even really using their tight ends on special teams right now. Like I know Sadie's isn't going to be playing special teams at like 42 or whatever he is. Well, we don't do that anyway, so we got all these defensive ends. We're up to 7 now with Colin Oliver. Like if that helps you free up and go after Sadie's, do it. Roster number wise, I don't know who you get rid of. I mean, at this point, I would probably be looking at Bohanna because he's on a one-year contract.
Yep,
he's not getting on the field. Well, he was a waiver wire guy, right? So like, he doesn't even have to be on the roster for a certain amount of time.
Nope.
I'd probably look at Bohanna and be like, "Look, dude, do we really need what six defensive tackles, 7 defensive end? That's 13 defensive linemen. Do we need 13 defensive linemen on this team? Probably not. Let's go grab a third tight end and at least Sadie is going to be able to block.
A quarter of your roster is defensive linemen right now. One fourth. Yeah. It's crazy. You would think they'd have to choose between Stackhouse and Bohanna. You know, which one do you want? And you can't have both.
I think they're going to lean Stackhouse because it seems like they're interested. Maybe not in him in 25, but interested in him developing in 26.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, either way, they're going to have to make that decision between those two in that situation. And then, of course, at quarterback, you have two injured quarterbacks going into this week. And as we're recording this, I have no update on either. And I don't think we're going to get one on Monday as we're recording this. So, hopefully it's not Clayton Thune on Saturday, but I guess it's all possibilities are possible right now.
I really don't think so, man. I think they'll be able to push it through. Honestly, concussion is always funky, right? Because for the most part, those guys return in 7 days in the NFL.
Yep.
But we also are just coming off of Josh Wiley, who very much did not play last week after having a concussion. So I guess you play it day by day. Now I'm a little worried about it. Because, yeah, once they return to the field, right, you're healthy enough to play. I'm more worried about Malik because it seems like his shoulder injury is to his throwing shoulder.
Yep.
Right? So
I was almost surprised when he ripped that ball to Jaden Reed based on how he was looking right after that play. Is when he ripped that, I'm like, oh, because I didn't know if he was going to be able to throw like at all. And then he ripped a pretty solid throw to Jaden Reed. But yeah, I have concerns about that as well.
Yep. Also, I think Malik might have just like that might be the game that prices us out from going $5 million for a backup to like, I don't know, he might make like 12 or something on there. I mean, Justin Fields has a APY of 20 million. Right.
Where I'm at with it, I was talking to the Farrington guys about this too, is like, even if, like, let's say he goes 2 years, 16 million, right? Even if Green Bay is willing to go 2 years, 16 million, if it's 2 years, 16 million, and you're deciding between a team like Minnesota or Cleveland or a team that doesn't have an established, like, good quarterback, you're taking the 2 years, 16 million without the team that doesn't have the quarterback. There's no avenue for him in Green Bay other than Jordan Love getting hurt. You're going to go to a team, even if the money is equal, where you actually have an opportunity, and that's not going to be in Green Bay. So even if Green Bay gets there with the money, I don't know how much he's going to want to stay in Green Bay.
Looking up the Jordan Love contract right now. Not because we're going to move off of him.
You want to trade Jordan? Breaking news, Justin wants to trade Jordan Love in the offseason.
I have been seeing stuff floating around like that too. And not even so much like we should definitely replace him, but just people were like, I have more fun watching the offense when Malik is under center. Jordan's dead cap next year is $98 million. It's $31 million in 27, but they'll almost certainly convert his
structure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be way higher. I don't think that they're going to get rid of Jordan for years and years and years. So, like, even if they wanted to, and I don't think they want to, Jordan is their quarterback moving forward.
There's probably a better chance that Malik Willis is out of the league before Jordan Love is not a Packer anymore at this point, it would probably be my guess.
Yeah. But shout out to Malik for doing what he's doing. I mean, I've always, I was still with Optimum Scouting and I can't remember if he was a 2021 or 2020 guy, but Malik, when he was coming out, like everyone loved him.
It had to be 2021 because Love was 2020, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But Malik, like, everyone loves that kid. And they just weren't sure if he was ever going to be able to, like, kind of take that next step.
He was a 2022 guy, actually. 2022 draft.
Okay, that makes sense. Because, yeah, this would have been summer of 21 when I was kind of really put on him. Well, some people thought he could have gone, like, 1-1.
Yeah.
Because obviously the talent is there. They just didn't know if he was going to be able to take that next step and stuff at the next level. But they never, like, everyone loves the kid. So, like, wherever he goes, like, people are going to fall in love. Like, I'm sure people are going to be comfortable throwing him the keys.
Yeah. He's a hell of a quarterback. And I think, like, the ideal backup quarterback. We'll see if he gets an opportunity as a starter. But, man, Green Bay's had quite the luxury. And what a freaking trade for a throwaway seventh round pick. to get him 2 years and have him play the way that he has. That's pretty remarkable. And all the credit to not only Goody for making the selection, but Matt for getting him ready for those games and Malik for playing the way that he's played in those games. Let's switch over to defense. Well, let's talk about the Keyshawn Nixon play in the end zone first, not the, the first one, not the DJ Moore one at the end, but the coverage between him and Hobbs and the switching, non-switching, and what happened on that play.
Banjo. Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yep. So this is why NFL teams don't play tight man coverage on these type of situations. Because what you do is offensively, you can formation it. Your player as a receiver, the NFL rules state, you have basically a yard where you can engage contact. So if you line up two guys right next to each other at receiver, right, in a little stack, and they're trying to play press man coverage against that stack, one of those receivers can basically block a defender into the other defender and leave the other guy wide open. So the answer to that, that NFL team, well, not even just NFL teams. Like, I know I talked to Tyler Brook about this, and he was like, we have Banjo coverage at, like, when I was coaching freshman linebackers and stuff. The adjustment is Banjo coverage, which is, so that, that play in the huddle is called man, right? It's a man coverage play. But once you see the stack receivers on the field, you usually at the NFL level make a Banjo check, which is, okay, the slot and the corner are going to play off. And it's, you know, first guy in, the slot's going to take him. First guy out, the outside cornerback is going to take him. I don't know if that call was made. I don't know who makes that call. Both guys should probably make that call if you're a good communicating defense. Yep. They were playing off coverage. They were in position and made it look like it was going to be Banjo. What happens is one runs a slant, right? Which in man coverage, that would have been Keyshawn on him. In Banjo, it would have been Hobbs taking the slant. And then two runs the corner route, which, like, that's not an uncommon route that you're going to get in the end zone. Again, Hobbs would have taken it if it was just straight man. They didn't make the Banjo check. Keyshawn would have taken it if it was the Banjo check, because first one in is the slant, first one out is the corner. Okay, I'm taking the corner. Both of them end up on the slant. Personally, and like, I know Matt was like, we don't want to talk about this because this is scheme. Again, I kind of, you know, hand wink motion from me when Tyler Brook is telling me that they're teaching this to high school freshman linebackers. First of all, there should have been a Banjo check in man coverage. So if that didn't get made, I'm cool with the signing blame on that too. In Banjo coverage, that should have been Keyshawn's guy who made the play and got butt naked wide open. So I'm cool with Keyshawn taking the heat. I know they had the weird situation post game where I think Schneidman was in the locker room when everyone else was doing like pressers and stuff. And they were like, yeah, Keyshawn was going to talk to the media. And then Hobbs was like, no, go sit down. I'm going to talk to the media instead. That was bad. That was terrible. That one I'm way more pissed about than.
Walk me through that. Why? I know. I think some of the beat guys were probably pissed at that too, but why? Why? So my read on it is that's Hobbs.
Oh, I'm just talking about the play. Like the play, okay. I'm pissed about.
Sorry.
Like,
I thought meant the post game thing that Hobbs, no, I mean, you know, that's, kind of covered for him.
Keyshawn's a hothead. Like, who knows what Key would have said to the media, right? Like, yeah, I get that. I get that for sure.
But it has to be sucks. It has to be so infuriating for Jeff Hafley to get a free rusher and to really kind of make almost the perfect call in that situation.
They were getting a sack. Yeah.
For sure.
Because you see him bailing a free rusher, and I was like, oh, we got him, dude. He's stuck in the mud. And then I'm like, how did that guy get so open? Then you watch the replay, and you're like, they both took the slant. Crap.
And what's really crazy is if they both would have taken the corner, it would have been totally fine. If they screw it up in the other direction and they both take the corner, because this, Brooks is going in that.
Brooks drops into the hole.
In that zone.
Yeah.
So, and then even too, and Williams has arm talent for days, so he could have made it, but he's got to whip all the way across his body to make that slant throw. Instead, so if they just both screw it up the other way, you're probably fine too. But it starts with me with the communication of
why weren't you on the same page? Both of you should have been over communicated, if anything. Big right? time.
These are two veteran players.
Yes.
This is not Bo Melton and you know, Kamal Haddon out there.
I saw people saying the you know, Hobbs, you know, being in the slot, maybe that was a factor and they didn't banjo check it. They're making Hobbs is, whether they called it banjo or not, or whether even Green Bay calls it banjo or not, a lot of times you'll see them strumming and stuff like that at the NFL level, not necessarily the Packers, to like communicate that across the field that they're going into a banjo check. He's been doing this since high school.
But here's the other thing too. It almost had to be a banjo check because Hobbs never went to go with his guy.
Yeah.
Went to go and run that corner route. So Hobbs clearly was expecting it to be a banjo call. And the bizarre thing with Nixon is he doesn't even go with the slant. He doesn't go with the
trails.
He's in no man's land. It just feels like a complete mess up by Keyshawn. And I would be, we don't know the exact communication. We don't know the call. We don't know what was discussed pre-snap. We don't know any of that. But I would be pretty freaking stunned if it wasn't just Keyshawn that completely boned that play.
100% with you. Yeah, I'm cool with if we got to make a call and we got to put blame. And again, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm 95 at least. Yeah. So,
either way, even if they didn't make the banjo call or whatever, the fact that those two players didn't have 100% communication on that play, it doesn't
negatives on both of them if they're not talking.
Then it's on both of them instead of just one. Yes, exactly. Yes. So there's two times the blame instead of just one in that scenario. So, we're 1,000,000% on the same page.
Yeah, if you have a nine or you have a seven route running scot free in the end zone, dog, we're not making excuses.
Nope.
I need a head. God. I need a pelt. Yep.
Ah. Just so frustrating. And that's the game too. You stop them there. It's fourth down. You take over. It's game over. And you got the perfect play call and your corner
fumble and any of the red zone trips and the
onside kick recovery.
A lot had to happen to lose that game, man.
We hit quite the parlay. That's like one of those tickets where you put in a dollar and it makes a million because you had 17 things go the exact bizarro way. Congratulations, Packers. You won the shittiest parlay of all time.
It's just repeated kicks to the nuts for the last, I don't know seven how days. Long overtime went, but really, 7 days.
Brutal. Yeah. Very brutal. Fun times. Another public enemy from this game, deserved or not. I think it's more optics at this point almost than anything, but it certainly results as well, is Rashawn Gary. The jogging on the first, three or fourth play of the game defensively and just not obviously having the impact, another game without a sack, etc. This is definitely, and I know Jeff Hafley went to bat for him pretty aggressively a couple weeks ago, but this to me remains one of the more interesting offseason situations for the Green Bay Packers as to what they do with Rashawn Gary.
Dude, it's bad. It really is bad. The effort isn't super high. The burst isn't there.
There's no closing. There's no closing at all. It's like one of the, I don't know about you, because I know you're a big defensive end guy or pass rusher guy in the draft as well. It's like, I think I would, you correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to be one of your favorite things to evaluate. It's mine as well.
I like watching the athletes. Those guys are freaks.
Yeah, for sure. And if a player doesn't have that closing burst to the quarterback, because it's not even just an athleticism, it's almost like an innate, I'm close to the quarterback, I'm going to feed and get to there. If they don't have that closing ability, it's a big red flag for me, and he just does not have it at all right now. We'll be right back.
No, and he's getting out. He's been getting out snapped for a couple weeks now by Enagbare. So I don't think LVN is on a full pitch count or on a full snap count right now, but it'll be interesting to see what happens when he is. And again, with the foot injury, I don't even know if that's something that's going to get fixed in season or if he's just getting through game by game. But yeah, dude, the Gary stuff is not good. And I know he had the sacks at the beginning of the year where Micah Parsons runs the quarterback directly into his face. Great. Good job. Love that. We don't have a Micah Parsons anymore. His pressure rate is through the crapper. The effort isn't there. The explosion isn't there. I know Halfley goes up to bat for him and stuff. That's great. I don't think I would want the DC completely throwing a starter under the bus in December. Like, I don't expect him magically to get better in December. I don't think it's a technique thing. Like, I genuinely think it's like an athletic ability thing half the time, or I guess mentality to a certain extent when he's quitting on a couple of these plays where they break the pocket. If he's not hurt, right? Because I've seen people float like, oh, he must be hurt. I don't know if he's hurt.
He hasn't been on the injury report, has he?
No, like, I don't think he's hurt. And hurt doesn't make you stop running.
Yeah.
If this is what they think he is, they have to cut him. They have to.
Yeah, a cutter trade. Yeah, and again, I think if we're talking trade value, I think it's late day three at best. I don't think we're talking.
If you want to pick up the contract, yeah, sure, go for it. But yeah.
Yeah. My biggest concern, that's probably not my biggest concern. My biggest concern is I wish he was getting more pressure on the quarterback. But up there too is like, dude's got the C on his chest. Dude's got the C on his chest and is jogging out plays on like the third or fourth play of the game. And again, I pointed this one out the other day, or maybe I don't even know. I do so many radio / podcast stuff. I don't know where I said it exactly, but Clavion Chaisson in the Ravens Patriots game on Sunday night, Chaisson runs around, gets to the wide receiver, strips the ball out. It's the game winning play at the end of that game because your defensive end is hustling and getting downfield and forcing a fumble. And you've got the dude with the C on his chest, you know, tall jogging throughout the play. And it's
quarterback's not even crossed the line of scrimmage yet. And he's like,
somebody else has got him. It's really bad optics, especially when you're team captain, especially when you're former top 15 pick, especially when you're one of the highest paid players on the team, especially when you are expected to step up in Micah Parsons' absence, et cetera, et cetera. It's not good.
Yeah. So if you want to free up a little bit of money and you want to do some internal re-signings and you're like, look, we'll cut Gary if it helps us keep
Quay Ryan. Let me put it this way, right? It almost feels like, I talked about this with Mike Wall. It feels like a one for one because let's say you do get something for Gary. It's probably like a fifth, sixth, seventh, right? At best. And if you get a comp pick for Enigbari, it's probably like a fifth, sixth, seventh at best.
Be low. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to be anything major. The amount of money that you save in releasing Gary pays for Enigbari's contract. They're obviously defensive end. I don't think there's any world in which you keep both Enigbari and Rashawn Gary when you have LVN, and we'll see what they do with his fifth year option, and you're paying Micah already, and you've got Sorrell, Baron Oliver, Bretton Cox, etc. I can't imagine a world. It does kind of to me feel, and there is a world where you could say goodbye to both. I'm not saying you have to have one or the other, but there's certainly not a world in which you have both. And it does feel like it's kind of like from draft compensation to payment to position, it does feel like, which one do you want?
Yeah, and I think to your point, you can kind of almost look them as like independent things. I think you can use them. Like, again, I'm of the opinion, like, Gary's just got to go. That contract's not worth it anymore, right?
I totally agree.
So, like, not even just like free up the cap space in 2026, but just like having all the dead cap flushed out by 2027, right? Like, there's benefits to that.
Big time.
And then whether you want to bring back Enigbari, I think you can make that decision on your own, right?
And to me, that depends on the cost. If you're talking to like $8 million,
for sure.
Let's do it. If it's like
he
all
should
of a sudden,
probably hit the market. You should probably hit the market, get a number, and then we'll
come back. Yeah,
you don't have your agent go to the combine, right? Figure out what the price is going to be, and then we could talk from there. We don't have to make that decision now, but
agreed.
I would at least keep the lines of communication open because, yeah, I mean, to your point, like you're going to have Oliver, you're going to have Sorrell. I think Cox is going to be a free agent,
restricted.
LVN is going to be, they're not, I don't think they're going to pick up that tender.
I don't know. That's an interesting one for me.
It's like $3.5 million. I don't think so. I don't think so.
Probably right. You're probably right. I think it's a little bit. I want to see what he looks like these next couple games, but that's a little bit more interesting.
He did. He played better than I thought he was going to in this game. He was flashing and stuff. Bad time for me, right? Keyshawn's stock down. Emmanuel Wilson, if we're not counting the blown chip,
the face mask catch.
Jordan Morgan stock up. Brenton Cox stock up. Maybe it's time for Nasir Stackhouse to have a breakout 10-sack game so I can really start eating some crow.
As I always say, I would much rather be wrong about a player and they prove me wrong and go out and dominate than me be right and they continue to suck every single time.
I didn't think Hopper was going to – like, Hopper was one of my least favorite draft picks after I got to the film. And now I think I'm like, if we go into 26 – well, he should be on the field in 26. If Quay leaves, I would much rather have him at Mike than McDuffie. And then if Quay comes back, I'd still want Hopper to push McDuffie in the third linebacker spot. So, Doug, I've put my hands up and say I'm wrong. Like, that's the game. You're not going to hit 1,000.
No, you are not. No, you're very much not. And I've certainly been there as well on a couple of different things. We did just learn that Colin Oliver does get in fact activated. There was a lot of talk and conversation as to whether or not they had until Monday. That is a really weirdly worded rule because it says a 21-day window. December 1st was the first day. And then, so December 21st would have been day 21. And then it says like you have 21 days from the day that you activate it. So man, everything says, it makes it feel like you would have had until Sunday, but there's no transactions on Sunday. Yep. But apparently they had until today, which is great. Kudos. That's amazing. But he does, in fact, get activated. John Fitzpatrick goes on IR. As you mentioned, they're going to have to make another couple, well, at least a move in order to get a tight end on the roster. We'll see if they have to do anything else. But
even the quarterback, you could just practice squad call up for.
True.
I mean, assuming that, knock on wood, guys don't really get banged up during practice this week. That's the only move I would kind of expect.
Theoretically too, if you're not going to add a outside tight end and you're just going with one of your practice squad guys, then you can practice squad call up because you only have 2 weeks left. So you could easily practice squad call up either of those two guys. And if Wiley's back, then you've got Wiley, Musgrave, and then whatever one of the two tight ends that you want to call up, and you could do it that way too. So they technically, I guess, do not have to make any tight end or quarterback move. Like you said, they could just do that via practice squad call up.
We'll see if they like those practice squad guys enough. I mean, I would have thought that they were going to do that this past weekend too when they only had two, but
they did not.
They did not. So, I mean, if the option waiting
for transaction,
maybe they just don't do it at all.
Yeah, we were messaging you and I with Ken, where I kept waiting for transaction. I'm like, did I miss something? Did they forget? What happened? Because the last thing I was expecting was to go into the game with two tight ends. I didn't think that was a realistic, but they're just like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. All right. A couple last ones. Obviously, Green Bay still really beat up. We'll keep an eye on the injuries through the course of this week. But I don't even know how to articulate Packers Ravens right now as we're sitting here recording this when we don't know like quarterback situations. That Lamar is day to day. He had a contusion. If I had to guess, I guess that he plays. Green Bay really unlucky to have this game on Saturday. If it's a Sunday primetime game, not only do you get an extra day for Jordan Love and others to heal up, especially from the concussion thing, but you also have Steelers and Browns happen before them on the noon window of games. And if the Steelers likely beat the Browns, then the Ravens are eliminated from playoff contention prior to the start of the game, which maybe gives them the impetus of like, all right, it's time to shut down Lamar Jackson. But while they still have any playoff equity is as minimal as it seems, they may have to go still up against Lamar. So Green Bay probably a little bit unlucky because why not with the placement of the game this week?
Yeah, because the Browns or the Ravens are basically the Lions.
Yeah, right? They need everything to go their way.
They need what do we call it? Magic number, right? It's four for
they
them,
need two
right?
two Ravens wins, two Steelers losses, and the Steelers have the Browns this week. So good luck.
Right. Yeah, so they're in that position. A loss in Green Bay that immediately ends their postseason chances. Green Bay, the playoff. Dude, we are officially in the spot. We can finish the year 0-4, and it really is a coin flip whether we make the playoffs or not, which I think would drive fans crazy. Because I think after the last two games, there's a certain segment of fans, at least, that they want the team to do so poorly that just whatever their fantasy for what the team looks like moving forward in terms of leadership and stuff like that, the trigger gets pulled. And they're slowly realizing, like, no, dude, they're going to be in the playoffs no matter what, pretty much. Like, it would, everything has to collapse for them and everything has to go right for the Lions. Have you looked at the playoff scenarios? I wrote this up on APC.
I did look at your article. I do know, too, like, I mean, there's a ton of ways to get to Packers Bears. Like, it's the Bears are a 67% chance to get the 2 seed. There's a 67% chance for the Packers to get the 7 seed. So, like, that's by far and away the most likely. And if it's not, like, then the next, like, arguably the next best possible scenario is Green Bay in the 2 seed and Chicago in the 7 seed. And you're still facing each other in the first round. So, yeah. We'll be right back.
Because basically, for Green Bay to win the North, they have to have Chicago drop the next two, Green Bay win the next two. And then the difference between the 2 and 3 seed is basically, does Philadelphia win out or not? I mean, that's all that needs to matter there. We're, for the most part, locked in the 7 seed. Like, just kind of bank on that. There is the possibility of the 6 to a decent extent. Basically, like, Green Bay would just have to hop one of the NFC West teams or Chicago down the stretch, or I guess not Chicago, because Chicago would be the NFC race, NFC North race. There's, like, the slimmest chance of Green Bay getting the 5 seed and playing an NFC South team, but it's, like, it's less than the percentage chance that we blew against the Chicago Bears. Like, the Niners would have to lose 2 of their next 3. Is this coming out on before Monday Night Football?
No, it'll come out after Monday Night Football. Okay. Yeah.
So then, depending on what the Niners do on Monday Night Football, they might have to lose out at that point. They have to lose 2 more. The Packers have to win out, and the Rams have to lose out.
And the Bears need to pick up a win too, right? Because otherwise, the Packers would be in the Bears would have to lose a game, because otherwise, the Packers would just be the 2.
Yes, true. Which they play the Niners. So I think that's already baked in somehow.
But the Niners need to lose 2, right?
2 of their next 3. I guess.
So the Colts game has to happen because the Bears need to lose that game too. Otherwise, Green Bay would be the 2 in that scenario.
Good God. Yeah, don't care about the 5 seed. We're not playing the NFC South. Like, it's not real.
Here's the thing, Justice. I want the Bears no matter what. Not only do I think that that's the best matchup for Green Bay, I want to eliminate Chicago. So,
the prevailing thought, I think, in Packers land, based off of everything happening at APC in the comments, has been, I don't think we're going to win the Super Bowl, but I'm dragging someone to hell with me. And that person is the Chicago Bears, right? Like, that has kind of been the mentality of Packers fans after that game, for sure.
Yeah. And not only that, too, but, like, I don't want to go to Seattle. I don't want to go to San Fran. I don't want to go to Philly, even though I don't think Philly's that good. I don't want to go to Philly. I don't want the Rams, you know, despite them having some issues as of late, and despite that potentially being almost like a pseudo home game where there's a lot of Packers fans there, I don't want to play what I think might be still the best team in the NFL.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get one of the NFC South matchups. You can't play Detroit. And I wouldn't want to anyway, even if I could. Like, the easiest team left to play that you could play is Chicago. So,
gonna look up Super Bowl odds right now because I know we're ahead of Chicago.
They were a couple days ago when I after the loss when I checked it.
Yeah, so it's in the NFC. It's Rams, Seattle, Eagles, Packers, Bears, Niners. A little surprised, people like the Niners 1 seed still. Like, there's a, I don't think people realize that. Like, that's a live situation, and then whoever wins the NFC South. I mean, it would be better to get the NFC South. It's not happening, fellas. It's, don't even think about that until week 18.
So yeah, Packers are 8th currently in Super Bowl odds behind the Rams, Seahawks, Patriots, Broncos, Bills, Eagles, and Jaguars, ahead of the Texans, 49ers, Chargers, Bears, Steelers, Bucks, Ravens, Lions, Panthers, and Colts, who are still theoretically in it.
Texans are too low.
I would agree with that. I don't trust them. I don't know.
Their defense is insane. I don't think I trust their offense to win it, but yeah.
Outside of that, that for the most part makes sense.
Here's my hot take. I got one hot take and we'll get out of here. Packers are going to win the NFC North. It's my hot take. I think they're going to beat Baltimore.
A rough stretch, man. They do. What's that? The Bears have a rough stretch. It's Niners and Lions.
The only issue is that if Green Bay wins this week against Baltimore, Detroit's out of it. But Detroit is as honorable of a final team.
I don't think they walked into Lambeau for Rodgers' last game as a Packer and kicked his teeth in. So, like, dude, I don't think that team is going to have any quit in them. It's the same thing. Nope. People were kind of fantasizing, like, maybe the Ravens will have nothing to play for when they play the Packers. I'm like, have the Ravens stepped off the gas once in the last 15 years? Yeah. No. 20 years? No. So, yeah, I could totally see the Lions nothing to prove and still messing with Chicago. That might be like a Sunday night game too, right? Because if it's put in a position where...
Well, unless if Panthers Buccaneers is a win and get in, that could easily be the obvious Sunday night game, just because it's winning in and losing out.
That impacts many fewer teams though, right? Because we'll have to see what the seating looks like.
I think from a competitive balance standpoint, you almost want it that way, where you've got that only affects those two. So they're in their own bubble. And then you would, in an ideal world, I don't think they'll do it this way, but in an ideal world, you play like the AFC games at noon or vice versa, and the NFC games at 3 or vice versa, so that all the AFC games are affected in the noon slate, all the NFC games are affected in the 3 p.m. slate, and then your Sunday night game is what ultimately just decides what only affects those two teams. The NFL doesn't give a shit about that. They just want to make the best matchups and make the most money, usually. Yeah. So I don't know. And there's no Saturday games next week, are there? I mean, there are. There are Saturday games too. So there's that whole factor to it.
Because we don't have a date announced, right?
Yeah, we don't have a date or time. So I think it's Saturday or Sunday. So there's going to be Saturday games too. So that makes the whole thing out the window. But we'll see. Like I said, the NFL doesn't give a crap about it.
You better not get 3 straight Saturday games, dude.
Unless they did like an NFC North Saturday where it was like Bears, Lions and Packers, Vikings were like the Saturday slate to figure out that sort of thing. Maybe they could do that, but I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see, but I think it honestly could come down to the Ravens game this Saturday. If they beat the Ravens, I think they really have a real chance to win the North. I think Chicago could easily lose these last two games. And I think Green Bay should beat Minnesota in that final game. That would be the most disappointing, one of the more disappointing ones, but yeah, we'll see. All right, Justice, where can we follow your great work?
AcmePackingCompany.com. Sign up, hang out in the comment section. A lot of people are throwing theories out. Goodness gracious, man. Just
Webs for Packers theories out there. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, deep conspiracy. It's the long sleeves. It's the long sleeves. Why are the Packers wearing long sleeves? That's what's wrong with the team.
I've heard everything now. Nothing surprises me anymore. Justice, I cannot thank you enough. Make sure to follow him at JUMOSQ and, of course, AcmePackingCompany.com. You find me at Andy Herman NFL. It's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, of course, go Pack, go.